As Justice Frager, thank you for informing me of that, and I'll see you for the
I will. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Pivovar, good morning to you.
Good morning, Judge.
Ms. Klein, good morning to you again.
Good morning.
We will again, the court will introduce, we will each introduce ourselves separately. Then I will recognize counsel again. And we will proceed with arguments at that time. I'm Mike Hevigan, I'm the Chief Justice, and in order of seniority of service on the court, the other members of the court introduce themselves.
Fine, good morning to you again. We will again, the court will introduce, we will each introduce ourselves separately, and I will recognize counsel again, and we will proceed with arguments at that point in time.
Good morning, this is Judge Miller Lerman. I believe some person may be broadcasting the delay is audible.
The other members of the court will introduce themselves.
We're having some technological issues, obviously. We're going to tackle those now. Okay, somebody has NET on in the background, and there is a delay for the NET broadcasting. So if anybody has NET on in the background, please turn that off. Okay, I think we're back to square one. I'll do my introduction again. I'm Mike Hevigan, the Chief Justice, and by order of seniority on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning, I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman.
William Castle.
Good morning, Stephanie Stacy.
Good morning, Jeff Funk.
Jonathan Papik, good morning.
And Justice Frydenberg has already indicated he is recused in this matter. Mr. Pivovar, you are here with us today.
Correct.
Good morning to you. And again, Ms. Klein, you are here. Good morning to you. Do either counsel have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
No, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pivovar, then you may begin.
Your Honor, members of the court, I'm Greg Pivovar. I represent Mr. Tion Hill in this appeal. Mr. Hill was convicted of first degree murder in 2017, and it was affirmed by this court in January of 2018. Within a year, he pro se filed the document that's before the court today, entitled Motion for New Trial, Newly Discovered Evidence. At the time, he filed it probably 3 days short of running into problems with statute of limitations. At that time, when the court received the document, it referred it to the county attorney's office for a response. The county attorney's office then responded to the document. And at the time that they responded to the document and that response was forwarded to the defendant, he voiced his objection to that procedure, indicating that that was not authorized by the statute or what was called for by the statute.
Counsel, is that authorized by the statute?
Not specifically. The statute speaks in terms of the court is to, the receiving court is to look at the document and decide whether it is in fact, it requires an evidentiary hearing or not. If it does require an evidentiary hearing, then the court is to forward the document to the county attorney's office for that evidentiary hearing.
Was Mr. Hill prejudiced by that procedure?
since this court's review is de novo, I suppose the argument exists that there is no prejudice arising from that. It certainly, as it worked out in this particular situation where the document that was the county attorney filed a response saying that there should be no evidentiary hearing and that the motion should be overruled.
So in this case, this is correct. In the absence of a hearing under our case law, we are reviewing de novo, correct?
That's my understanding. That's the current law, Judge.
So a response was ordered, whether or not authorized, right? Is that correct?
That is correct.
And then a year later, or 1 week short of a year later, the judge made a ruling. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in that ruling, the ruling tracked word for word the response, including a typo or two. Is that correct?
There's a total of 18 words different, yes.
Okay. So how does that inform us with respect to the trial judge's consideration of the record?
I don't think it informs you at all. And that's part of the argument is that whether you ignore the fact that it's not authorized by statute to forward that to the county attorney's office, when the document denying is simply a repeat of the county attorney's response, I don't think we have any.
In that ruling that denied the motion, whatever motion we should call it, were there any references to the 58 pages of allegations, or was it a recitation of the law, such as whatever you're arguing is not admissible, whatever you're arguing wouldn't change the outcome, things of that nature? Was there any specific reference in the judge's ruling that would indicate a consideration of the motion, however so we might characterize it?
That precisely is my argument. You can't even tell from the ruling that she reviewed the document in any way. There's no reference to the document. It's simply a boilerplate that is often used in matters in that county as far as a blanket response to all motions of this kind. So, at that point, the argument I think becomes that there was no review of the document pursuant to statute and a review that would say, hey, this really isn't a motion for new trial because of X, Y, or Z. This really appears to be a mistitled document, which is part of the argument here, that it is in fact in the form most of the time as of a motion for post-conviction relief, especially when you consider the fact that a big portion of the entire argument is that he has actual innocence. That's only allowed in a motion for post-conviction relief
In the opening paragraphs of the document, there is a reference to a request to vacate. So, and admittedly, it is peppered with motion for a new trial. So what are we to do? What is it?
Innocent.
Well, it's labeled motion for new trial. I don't think under the case law you're bound by his labeling. And obviously this is pro se, but don't think you're bound by his labeling necessarily. There is a great deal of motion for new trial language, but there is a great deal of language referring to post-conviction issues. I will refer the court to the decision in this matter, the original decision, wherein Mr. Hill was granted a number of post-conviction issues, or was granted. They were not decided, and they were left open for future the possibility of proceeding on post-conviction. As I read his original brief, and as I read it in comparison to the document of motion for new trial, many of those issues are included in this document before the court today.
How would we say the trial judge erred if she was presented with a document that was entitled new trial motion, but some of the allegations may best be post-conviction material?
How would I do it?
How would you characterize the trial judge's consideration of a thing like that?
Well, I think you could draw the inferences from the state's response and the order that the judge wrote that there's an indication that the document may have not even been reviewed in issuing the order. And then from there, it should have been reviewed under the basis of a post-conviction action, which is a slightly different review in analyzing whether an evidentiary hearing is to be granted or not. There's a different standard than the standard under a motion for new trial newly discovered. So I think with that, and you would say the trial judge erred because there's no indication that the document was thoroughly reviewed and looked at. Well, if there's no further questions, I would ask that you grant that you look at this as a motion for post-conviction relief and grant him an evidentiary hearing thereon.
Thank you, Mr. Pivovar. Ms. Klein, good morning again, if you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Kimberly Klein, Assistant Attorney General, representing the state in this matter. Your Honors, this is a motion for new trial because that's what the defendant called it and repeatedly referred to it as throughout the 119 pages of whatever it was he presented to the court. I take issue with Mr. Pivovar's contention that there's no indication in the court's order that it looked at it. On the second page of the court's order, the court says the majority of his motion can be viewed as a complaint as to how his trial was handled, and the court was unable to decipher any newly discovered evidence mentioned in the motion. And in fact, the majority of the paragraphs start out with the phrase, there was irregularities and misconduct in the proceeding, but no mention of newly discovered evidence. I think that clearly indicates that the court had looked over the motion, at least to a certain extent. And the fact that the court basically adopted the state's response may appear unseemly, but if the analysis is correct, I don't know what the real problem is. And the court said, look, there's nothing in here that talks about newly discovered evidence. And as you comb through the 119 pages of stuff that the defendant submitted, it's mostly an indication that he didn't like what happened at trial, and there are certain let me tell you what really happened inferences, but strictly from his point of view. And was frankly, I don't know why.
Was the trial judge authorized to direct a response, or under the statute that got the way it's been recently revised, was there a duty by the trial judge to review the submission and thereafter, after an initial assessment, seek a response. What do you think the statute anticipates for that course? And then given our ruling that when there's a denial without a new hearing, we have a standard, the de novo standard under this new statute. How should this proceed? Thank you.
The court basically jumped the gun in having the state respond. It should have analyzed it initially and then determined whether or not a response was warranted. But if the court had undertaken an appropriate analysis from the outset, the motion would have been denied almost immediately, because it's almost all based on what the defendant chooses to characterize as newly discovered evidence. But according to the motion for new trial, newly discovered evidence is obliged to be supported by either affidavits, depositions, or oral testimony, none of which exist in this case. So the motion, frankly, should have been denied initially at the outset without requiring any more information from anyone, because it simply doesn't meet the statutory requirements as set forth in 29-2101 and 2102. And I think under a de novo standard, this court can go back, look at the motion, and say there's nothing there which supports his claims of newly discovered evidence. Ergo, denial or dismissal of it was appropriate, albeit for the wrong reason on the part of the district court.
Well, at this point, since we're all talking about what is this thing, are you aware of cases that have been styled a motion to vacate, but that this court considered as a motion for post-conviction relief, which is evidently what the appellant would seek?
Off the top of my head, I am not. I think it would have been entirely inappropriate for the district court to have done it in this case, because it was titled a motion for new trial. That phrase was repeated almost ad nauseum through the thing. And while there are what we, I guess, in the legal profession would consider post-conviction claims in it, that apparently was lost on Mr. Hill, and he simply shoveled in everything he could possibly conceive of into what he has called his motion for new trial.
I believe in our case Phelps, that the motion was styled as a vacate, but we considered it as a post-conviction motion.
Okay,
for what it's worth, but we are here discussing what is this thing. Thank you.
Yeah, and I think this thing is whatever the person who created it calls it.
We've often said, have we not, that when the title of a motion doesn't reflect its substance, that we'll treat it based on its substance rather than its title.
You have. But
so how do you square your position in this case with that principle?
Because this is a mix of a whole host of creatures. This is part motion for new trial, part post-conviction, and part simple complaining. There are so many things thrown into this thing that to parse it out as something that the defendant doesn't seem to think that it is would be inappropriate in this case. If he thinks it's a motion for new trial and has repeatedly referred to it as such, although he is including some things which we would consider post-conviction subjects, then I think under those circumstances, we are obliged to take it for what he thinks it is. And if he's wrong, well, then he's wrong. By my calculation, I did a real fast figuring. I think he still has, by my figuring, 21 days to file a post-conviction motion. So he's not entirely out of time for it, but he needs to get on the stick if he's going to file a post-conviction action. So he still has that remedy available.
I beg your pardon, What would be the dates that you're suggesting? Because as we all know, there's a shortened timeline on post-conviction.
Yeah, Your Honor, I did this a while back. I'm sorry, I don't have my dates written down. I just made a quick note that I have about 21 days left for him to file his post-conviction action.
Well, I believe the mandate, if I'm not mistaken, was in February of 18, Am I referring to the wrong episode?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, and I don't recall right off when he filed his motion, what this thing, whatever we conceive it to be, on January 16th, 2019. So he has got some time left. And like I said, by my calculation, and I offer no assurances as to its accuracy, but by my calculation, he's still got some time left to file a post-conviction motion.
I beg your pardon. What's day one under that calculation?
It would start with the date of the mandate, and it would, I guess the time starts with the issuance of the mandate and would end with the filing of the motion for new trial, which would be January 16th, 2019 is what I have written down. So I'm sorry, I don't have the date of the mandate in front of me.
So you're saying January of 19 is day one?
Well, that would be the day that I guess that would be that when the 1 year time period for post conviction would actually stop, is what I'm saying. It starts with the issuance of the mandate, and then it would be told by the filing of the motion for new trial on January 16th, 2019. So whatever that time is between the mandate and this would have lapsed under the 1 year time frame.
Okay, I beg your pardon. So the denial of the new trial would be day one in May of 20. Is that what you would be thinking?
Yeah, it would. Yes. Yeah.
For a post-conviction thereafter. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think we're on the same page.
What effect does Section 29-303 of the post-conviction statutes, which states that the remedies of post-conviction is not intended to be concurrent with any other remedy existing in the courts of this state, what impact does that statute have on the proposition that you can file both a motion for new trial and a motion for post-conviction relief in the same document?
In the same document? I honestly don't know. I've never been able to make a lot of sense out of that provision in the post-conviction statute. And there's frankly been not that many cases that have interpreted it. And I, like I said, I haven't been able to make a whole lot of sense one way or the other out of it. It seems to me, I think we've probably all seen this. We have seen both a motion for new trial and either prior or subsequent post-conviction action, and there's not a problem with that. To do them concurrently would be kind of a strange hybrid creature, and I don't know that we've ever actually had a case or a ruling on that. So I'm afraid I just don't have an answer for you, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Well, what? Maybe we'll take a look at State versus Harris. 292 Nebraska 186, where we said something to the effect that the post-conviction remedy is a cumulative remedy that may not be pursued concurrently with any other remedy existing under state law, including the remedy sought in a motion for a new trial and a motion for writ of error quorum nobis.
That being the case, it seems to me that they would have to be, if I'm understanding Harris correctly, then they would have to be separate filings and they couldn't be joined in one massive pleading, if I'm understanding Harris correctly.
Thank you.
And I see I am out of time. We would ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? 8 seconds, Mr. Bibavar.
No rebuttal, Judge.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Pivovar, were you appointed in this matter?
I was not in this particular matter, Judge.
Well, thank you for your service. Anyway, this concludes arguments in State versus Hill and also concludes arguments for the day. So, counsel, you are excused and the court is adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.